then I get bumped from Backlash. I'm not good enough to call Backlash.
Be grateful that you didn't.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client,
Mama Monster,
conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat, delete.
You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 547 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, May 13th, 2018. I am the Solid Monster. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. This is my first without my mother, so it's a tough day, but I wanted to do the show, especially since I won't be doing one next week. I'll be out of the country, and I'm also going to be replaying at the end of this show the Mother's Day Madness segment that I recorded last year with Mama Monster. It's still my favorite episode of the Sound Off, my favorite segment in the 10-plus years that I've been doing this, and I only wish that there could have been an encore this year as I had planned, but it was not meant to be. So I will replay that later in the show. Audible, you guys know what to do. Show some love. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster. It's been a kind of a slow month so far. So if you have not taken advantage of the 30-day trial using our link, you can get yourself a free audiobook or hand it off to a friend or family member if you've already used yours. You got to sign up, put your information in there. You won't get billed if you do happen to cancel in those first 30 days, and either way, you get to keep one free book of your choice. So audibletrial.com/Solomonster. You can get the new Nutcrackamora shirt in our Pro Wrestling Tee store. And I want to say thank you to everybody who made a PayPal donation this week. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out here on this show. I want to say thank you to Nemesis, Nathan Moyers. Thank you for your very generous contribution. Also, John Luis Cannon Lopez, the Florida Freebird, Brian Passera, Beast Mode, Brock Joseph, Raymond the Mountie Medina, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, the Show Off, Corey Van Dam, the Griller, Ray Grit, the Belgian Brute, Nicholas Overmeer, the Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard. I hope Mama Eichard is doing well here on Mother's Day. The Malaysian Mastermind, Samuel T, Gabriel the San Diego Beer Snob Solis, Brett Brickfist Brode, also, Deathblow David Floyd. I have not heard from David in a while. And he also graduated on Wednesday, getting his MSW, which I believe is his Master's of Social Work. So congrats to David. The Bogota Big Shot, Fernando Leon. Zach the Mac Sheriff. Dastardly, Derek Smith. Tyler the Tank Smuskowitz. The Renton Road Warrior, Taylor Schatt. Rochester Ruff, Victor De Leon. Also, the Reno Renegade, Wayne Ashanti, sorry, I almost screwed it up. See, I actually asked Wayne in advance. I said, look, bro, you got to help me out here. The last thing I want to do is botch your name, and so what do? I almost botch his name. But no, Wayne Ashanti, thank you very much for the donation. And also the Archangel, Anthony McLean. He is a longtime listener, a first-time donator, who celebrated his 20th birthday this past week. So happy birthday to Anthony. And everybody else who made a contribution this week, you can always do so on thesolomonster.com. Backlash. Backlash was trash. I don't really have a whole lot more to add to it than you didn't already hear in my full review, which is up on the YouTube channel, by the way. 80,000 plus views, people commiserating about Backlash. The Twitter poll, I have to mention this. I put a poll up after each one of these pay-per-views, as you guys know. And yeah, Backlash is considered a quote-unquote B show, right? It's never really been a major show. This poll got over 5,000 votes, which is way higher than normal when it comes to one of these shows. This is like WrestleMania numbers there. Okay, over 5,100 people voted in this poll. Boy, people get awfully engaged when they are angry about something. Just 8% gave this show a thumbs up. And, you know, 5,000 plus is a pretty good sample size to go with. 8%. Thought that this show was worthy of a thumbs up. A whopping 92% of you gave it a thumbs down, which is one of the worst ratios ever in any poll that I've ever posted. It might be the worst. I don't know offhand, but if it wasn't the worst, it's right up there. Somebody actually pointed out that this poll was the inverse of a poll that I put up after Battleground 2 years ago. That show had the Shield triple threat main event for the championship. That was 92 up and 8 down. The show was, you know, I referred to the show online when I was tweeting at the end there. I said, this show outside of the opening match between Seth Rollins and The Miz, which was outstanding, this show was an abomination. And it was. And it ran way longer than it had any right to. You had Roman Reigns and Samoa Joe in their, trading rest holds. It was mostly coming from Joe. I'm sure that was the idea, was to put Roman Reigns in rest holds at 11:15 p.m. at night to get people to boo Joe and cheer Reigns. Of course, it didn't work out that way. What ended up happening is the crowd just shit on both guys. And they could not wait to get to the exits as soon as the ref counted three. Their feet could not carry them fast enough to those exits when the referee counted three. And the next day, WWE on their Twitter account promoted Raw by teasing. This was their tease going into Raw on Monday night. Now that Roman Reigns has vanquished Samoa Joe, is it time for him to once again face the beast, Brock Lesnar? I feel like I'm trapped in a bad movie that just won't end. The only saving grace of the entire show was that Intercontinental Championship match. AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura, I thought, were having a pretty good match. That was marred by, while it was funny to see the two of them kick each other in the crotch at the same time, it was a pretty horrible finish considering that they were just coming off double countout finish. I would have to hope this is all part of the plan and it's leading to some ultimate stipulation, whatever the hell that is. That will hopefully end this, with a decisive winner for once. But still, you know, in the interim, you know, we've got to sit through these matches, and sometimes we really get into these matches. And to give back-to-back horrible finishes like that is inexcusable on two back-to-back pay-per-views. This is coming after the double countout finish they did in Saudi Arabia. And I kind of joked in my review. I said, I wonder how many other crappy finishes WWE could come up with for these two guys. You know, because they're going to obviously have at least one more match. How many more possible crap finishes could this company come up with? Well, David Blanchard, in our Facebook group, did not disappoint. He decided to accept my challenge. And so these are just some examples. These are the other ways in which WWE can disappoint us in pay-per-view matches for the remainder of this AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura feud. So what he proposes is that at Money in the Bank, we have a last man standing match where neither man can stand before the referee reaches a 10 count. That would be pretty lame. Extreme Rules, they could have a steel cage match. Both men escape the cage with their feet hitting the floor at the exact same time. Thus, no winner. SummerSlam could be the I Quit match. This one is my favorite. Styles refuses to quit, and Nakamura no speak English, so he can't quit. We've got Hell in a Cell. Both men fall off the cage at the same time, have to be stretchered out. TLC. Both guys retrieve the belt at the same time. Then they have a tug of war, a la Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar from a few years ago, until they go off the air. Survivor Series could be a submission match. Both men tap out at the exact same time to dueling dick locks. And finally, Clash of Champions. A table match. Both men are on the apron. They kick each other in the nuts simultaneously, and they fall through the table at the exact same time. So this could carry us straight on into 2019, if they want to keep this thing going. I hope and suspect that this will end at Money in the Bank. As far as what the stipulation would be, you know, I think about potential stipulations here, and I think the only way that this could end with a decisive winner, and I suppose that they could always find a way not to have one. They could have a tie or something. But you have like an Iron Man match. Like a 30-minute Iron Man match. And at the end of the 30 minutes, whoever has the most number of falls, whether it's a count-out fall or a nutshot DQ or whatever it is, the person with the most number of falls wins. Normally when you have a situation where there's a tie, I mean, they've gone into sudden death before, right? They did that in the first Iron Man match. But I would think that that probably is where we're headed. I have no idea. I guess we'll have to just wait and see. Raw Monday night was at the Nassau Coliseum, nearby here in Long Island, New York. 2,500 votes in our poll. 41% thumbs up, 59% thumbs down. That's one of the worst Raw polls that we've had in a while. Raw's been doing pretty good in these polls, but not this week. Kurt Angle announced there would be two Money in the Bank matches on the pay-per-view this year. And I saw the reports of them possibly doing a tag team Money in the Bank. I mean, talk about beating an idea into the ground. The idea they have is absolutely right. You have one match for the men. You have one match for the women. Four men from SmackDown. Same thing with the women. Makes sense to me. We don't need more than that. And there are some people who will say, well, it doesn't make any sense to have a Money in the Bank pay-per-view unless every single match on the show is Money in the Bank and Hell in a Cell. Every match should be Hell in a Cell, which I think they tried years ago, and that didn't work out too well. There's a reason they don't do that anymore, because it's stupid. These gimmick pay-per-views were a dumb idea to begin with, but you don't have Hell in a Cell matches up and down the card. You don't have Money in the Bank matches or just ladder matches up and down the card. I mean, you may have a gimmick show where you have every match has a gimmick, but it's not the same gimmick. So I don't really get where people are coming from. It's always been that way. I don't know why some people are still bothered by the fact that the show is called Money in the Bank and yet only two matches on the show are Money in the Bank. That's kind of the way it's always been. So Braun Strowman beat Kevin Owens to qualify. He was the first person to qualify for the men's Money in the Bank match. My favorite pastime right now, I think, in WWE is watching Braun Strowman mow down Kevin Owens in cold blood every single week out on the floor with those shoulder tackles. That never gets old. And the way Owens sells it and oversells it, it just, you would think he got sideswiped by a bus, which I guess in a way he kind of did. Ember Moon qualified for the women's Money in the Bank match. Beating Ruby Riott and Sasha Banks. When she pinned Ruby, she hit the Eclipse. I have to say, you know, Ruby Riott, she was given the chance to shine on the main roster in the last several weeks, right? It wasn't that long ago. The Riott Squad is part of the Superstar Shakeup, was called up. And, when they got shook up, they were shook up to Raw. But it still wasn't that long ago they got called up even to SmackDown. And in the time that she's been on Raw more specifically, I shouldn't say that because she had the chance to wrestle Charlotte when she was on SmackDown. Point is, she's had some big matches. She's had matches with Bayley. She's had matches with Sasha Banks, and she's delivered. She's had some pretty damn good matches with them so far. So I've been impressed. The polar opposite of Peyton Royce and Billie Kay on SmackDown. If you want to look at some of the recent call-ups, you look at Raw, you look at SmackDown with the women, and you see, Ruby Riott, and you see somebody like a Peyton Royce. And not just in terms of winning and losing, and Peyton, I think, has maybe won one match on TV so far, and it might have been a tag team match, but polar opposites. I've not been impressed one iota with the Iconics on SmackDown. They've actually been very disappointing, and the matches have been very disappointing. Ruby Riott, on the other hand, she's been pretty impressive so far, and I've taken more notice of her on the main roster than I ever did in NXT. I was never really impressed. You know, I looked in NXT, maybe just because at the time NXT was sort of brimming with some pretty damn good female talent, or just using the talent better, I don't know, but she didn't really stand out. I mean, her look stands out, but in terms of her matches, she didn't. But on the main roster, so far so good. This was also another good match, and right person won. Ember Moon now goes to Money in the Bank. I'd have to say she's probably my early favorite to win. But we don't know all the women yet, so I will reserve judgment on who I think will win that one. We got a Bobby Lashley sit-down interview, my God, with Renee Young. I can't crap on this because I was on the show a week or two ago, wasn't I? I was talking about, why have they not done anything with Bobby Lashley? We have not heard Bobby Lashley say one word on television since he came back. What's his motivation? Why is he back? What makes him tick? Well, this week, they listened to the fans, I guess, I don't know, but they gave us a sit-down, pre-recorded interview with Bobby Lashley and Renee Young, and he talked about not his motivation, why he's back, necessarily, although I guess maybe it ties into the theme of family in a way, but we didn't really get any sort of real explanation of why he's back, what he's going after. He talked about his sisters. He's got three sisters. His oldest sister, he says, used to chase him around the house with a broom. Another sister named Jessica carried around a white towel when she was younger. And the towel got really dirty and really gnarly. And then one day, I guess at school, I don't know, a bully took the towel away from her. And that's when Bobby stepped in, he got the towel back, and he proceeded to shove that dirty, nasty towel down the bully's throat. His third sister was in the military and carried her helmet with her. And one day Lashley, I guess, tried to play a prank on her. He tried to steal the helmet, and she beat him with it. And so Renee tries to end the interview. They finally have reached the conclusion of the interview. She's about to wrap it up, and Lashley interrupts her. He puts his finger up and interrupts her and says, "No, wait a minute. Can I just say one more thing? I want to say hello to my sisters." And they zoom in on his face. He looks dead in the camera, and he reads off, you know, each of their names, and he just goes, "I love you." I just sat there thinking, okay, that's one of the creepier interviews I've seen in a while, but all right. I will say this, though. I will give them credit for doing the sit-down, because I think we need more of that. I wasn't expecting this to be the subject matter that was covered, but A, we got the sit-down, which is a step in the right direction. B, the video package. They did show a video package before the interview. It sort of led into the interview, and they had highlights of Lashley from his first run in WWE and, you know, his time as an amateur wrestler, and talked about him being an MMA fighter, and I thought the video package was very well done. So I thought the video was really, really great. The interview itself was just very bizarre. Even some of the language. There was another line in here where he says, you know, he's talking about his family, and he goes, "Well, now I have an extended family. It's called the WWE Universe, and we're going to have a lot of fun together." He says this, and I'm just thinking to myself, it's like, it sounds like Lashley is getting ready for, like, the biggest orgy in the history of orgies, of which I want no part. But I'm like, all right, that's kind of cringeworthy. Like, that's definitely a scripted line, but I don't know. All right. I was just completely taken aback by this interview. I remember Lashley in TNA, and I know that not everybody, when they come over to WWE, is a carbon copy of what they were and who they were in TNA. But I got to be honest with you, okay? For every Samoa Joe and somebody like that who, no matter where he goes, Joe just comes off as a total badass, and you could argue, should he have, you know, lost to Roman Reigns at Backlash, and the answer is no, but forget that. Joe, when he comes out, he's got that aura about him in WWE, just like he did in TNA, and he's doing very well for himself. But for every Samoa Joe, there is a Bobby Roode, or in this case, so far, there is a Bobby Lashley. Now, Lashley hasn't been back for that long, but, you know, he's been back a little bit of time. And in TNA, Lashley was the Destroyer, right? And then he had the MMA thing going with, what was that guy's name, Lambert, right? Dan Lambert and stuff. And, I mean, by that point, I wasn't really watching much of Impact, but I sort of tapered off right around the time when Lashley was still, and not because of Lashley, but I just completely lost faith and interest in the product and gave them so many chances that I just gave up on them. But Lashley as the champion was actually really good. And he had the chance to sort of show more personality during that run than I ever saw him show in WWE. And I was enjoying his work there. And he really did. He came off as sort of a badass type of guy that you didn't want to mess with. And I saw this interview, and I don't know where they're going with this. I am curious. I'm a little worried. There was nothing badass about him that came off here, but maybe they're, you know, just using this to show his personal side, you know, let him talk about family. Maybe next week, they didn't say anything, I don't think, about a part two. I was kind of thinking, well, maybe they could do a part two next week and they can focus on, you know, his wrestling career, or maybe they incorporate some talk about his MMA pursuits. And then they've done this before. I mean, they did it with Goldust many years ago, or Dustin Rhodes. They did it with Mankind, where it's like a two or three part interview series over a period of weeks where you really get to learn more about the person. I hope this is not the only segment like this that they do with him, because if it is, then what a waste. All this time, they finally sit him down to thank his sisters and say, "I love you." I got an email from a listener this week, Kevin, who wanted to know, he also was completely flabbergasted by the segment, and he wanted to know if this was just a case of WWE not really paying attention to what's going on, or being too busy to pay close enough attention to a segment like this. Did it slip through the cracks? How could this end up on TV this way? I think, or I'd like to think, that this is part of a longer story that they have only just started to tell. Because it's true. We tend to get, and I'll speak for myself on this, but we can get ahead of ourselves sometimes if we see a segment that doesn't make sense or that is completely horrendous, but maybe it's part of a longer story they're trying to tell. Sometimes that story doesn't get finished because they have ADD booking. They'll lose interest. They'll move on to something else. We've seen lots of start and stops. We've seen lots of storylines that never get tied up. It's very frustrating. Maybe in this case, it's part of a longer story that they have in mind for this guy. Maybe there is a method to the madness. But if not, then I think Kevin may be onto something here. Because, I would use the three strikes rule from baseball here with Lashley, right? So I've called for them to let the man speak. Let him show some of that personality I know he's got in there somewhere. And so, like I said, I'll use the three strikes analogy. This was strike one. This segment was a swing and a miss. No big deal. Won't kill him. Just because he went on and on about his sisters. He was interrupting Renee Young and everything to talk about how much he loved them. It was fine. It's one interview, one swing and a miss is fine. Strike two, I would start to be a little concerned. Strike three, and you're out. If this is not part of some kind of longer story or meant as a way to introduce all of his sisters to WWE as some kind of badass trio of women's wrestlers, maybe that's part of the plan. And if this guy is still cutting awkward promos in a few weeks, then you're out. That's it. The three strikes rule. You can apply the same rule with Roman Reigns. Not his promos per se, but just the different attempts to get him cheered and get him accepted by the mass audience. Only with Roman, he's gotten about 30 swings. And they've all been foul balls. We're all sort of, I think, with Roman Reigns just waiting for that one at-bat to finally end. I don't even care. Hit a home run. Hit a home run, strike out. I don't care. Just put the goddamn ball in play already and move on down the batting order. That's kind of how I look at that whole situation. Drew McIntyre and Dolph Ziggler. They beat Rhino and Heath Slater. No mention of the 3MB connection between McIntyre and Slater. Thank God. They should stay as far away from that as possible. I like the pairing so far. I mean, when they're out there and they're hitting that double finish where, you know, he hits the Claymore kick and Ziggler hits the zigzag, it's a cool visual. But, I watch these guys when they walk to the ring. I watch them in the ring. And I watch them leaving, walking to the back. And it's unbelievable how much more of a star, of a superstar, McIntyre looks than Ziggler. When they're walking side by side like that, like it's comical. This guy, he is built exactly what you would want out of a world champion professional wrestler, is Drew McIntyre. The only fault with him I could possibly find in the mind of Vince McMahon, and from just stories about Vince and listening to him talk about Cesaro when he did that interview with Steve Austin, the only possible fault I could find with Drew McIntyre, if I'm Vince McMahon, I could see him having an issue with the accent. But even the accent is not, it's not like a thick, thick accent where you can't understand what he's saying. It's not even as thick as like Finn Balor or Sheamus or somebody like that. It doesn't bother me one bit. Some people it might bother. Those people need to get over themselves. That's the only possible fault with him that I could find. Some might say, well, he doesn't have a lot of personality. He's not overflowing with charisma. You know what, though? You know, he hasn't really had a chance to show it yet. He's only been on the main roster for a little bit. He hasn't really had much of a chance to show it, but I look at this guy and I just think this guy's a superstar. He just looks like a rock star here, and if he's not contending for the championship by the end of the year, then there's something very, very wrong with the people who write for and book this brand. We have Bobby Roode beating Elias. Pretty boring match. Yeah, I mentioned Bobby Roode a few minutes ago. I wanted to talk about him just for a little bit because Roode is another example. You know, when you talk about talent from TNA, a lot of that talent has migrated over to NXT and WWE in recent years. And I was really happy when Bobby Roode came over. I was a big Bobby Roode fan, especially when he was doing the dirty heel stuff in TNA with Austin Aries. I became a fan of Bobby Roode, whereas before, when he sort of just looked like the Triple H clone and had the longer hair, you know, I didn't really think much of him. He was just sort of there. And then he developed a personality and he was kind of funny and he was doing the heel thing and I enjoyed it. And so when he came to WWE, I was excited. And in NXT, some of the heel work he did and like the heel promo stuff with Roderick Strong that I remember, it was very entertaining. And then he came to the main roster and he debuted as a babyface. And I thought that was a big mistake. But then I figured, well, maybe they're just debuting him as a babyface and it'll be a slow transition to a heel turn. So we'll start out with him as a babyface and maybe people won't cheer for him as much, or they'll turn against him. It'll give him an impetus to turn or whatever. Well, he's been on the main roster now for a while, and there's no indication that they have any plans to turn him heel or anything like that. They even had a chance many months ago to do a double turn with him and Rusev, and they didn't pull the trigger on it. So he comes out every week, and his music now, I think, even with his music, it's sort of the law of diminishing returns, where after a certain period of time, even the music is not enough, I think, to kind of draw a big reaction. The music is still the biggest thing that gets a reaction when he comes out. When the bell rings, it's just crickets. And it's not because he's a bad wrestler, it's because he's miscast. As a lot of people are on both of these shows. Randy Orton has been miscast as a babyface for a very long time. I don't know if turning him heel at this point is even enough to get me to care about him, but you know, Bobby Roode should be a heel. Bobby Roode should be a guy who comes out, he's all smug, he's hurling insults at other people, he thinks he's God's gift and all this stuff. That's what he should be doing right now. I'm better than you, I wear the fancy robes and the suits and all that. That's who he should be. And instead, a couple weeks ago, they have him on TV, he's hanging out with the Midcard Brigade, he's, you know, shaking his ass on TV and twerking and all this stuff with Titus O'Neil, because nothing says star like, you know, dancing with all the Midcarders. And then this week, he has a boring match with Elias. He won. Yay, I guess. Whatever, good for him. But, I mean, he's got a very big problem right now in that he just seems like he's sort of stuck in this role that just doesn't fit. And people don't really seem to care about him. So hopefully they'll come to realize that very soon, because, you know, he should be doing more than he is. And I think you've got a guy like a Seth Rollins as an example. Okay. Seth Rollins, I'm going to talk about Rollins in a second, but he's got the open challenge thing now, and he's been killing it in the short time as the Intercontinental Champion, when he won the title, since then defending the title. He's been killing it on TV. He's been having great matches. The people are into him. The people are into him not only for his music, but even when the bell rings, he's just firing on all cylinders right now. And I look at this and I say, man, wouldn't it be kind of cool if Bobby Roode had turned heel and you had a heel Bobby Roode against Seth Rollins in a feud for the IC title? Now, there's a program, there's a match I think I could get behind. What do you do with him right now? If you don't change him at all, what do you do with Bobby Roode? Who does he wrestle? Who does he fight? Does he just keep wrestling Elias? This is not working. The guy is drowning on this show. Something has to change. I mentioned Seth Rollins. He is now issuing open challenges for the IC title. He issued one on TV on Monday night. Out came Mojo Rawley. I could practically feel the groans from the crowd. But I didn't mind it so much only because I think the open challenge gimmick, when they do it, it could be an eye-opener, you know, for the fans, for some of this talent that normally we wouldn't care about. So if Mojo had gone out there and had just tore the house down in a 15-minute match with Seth Rollins, all of a sudden people might be like, wow, this was quite the night for Mojo Rawley. Now, that didn't happen. I didn't think the match was anything overly special. But I don't fault them for maybe trying to use the gimmick to, you know, try to get some of the middle of the card guys over a little bit more. And he's already teasing the open challenge gimmick for tomorrow night, so it seems like this is going to be the gimmick going forward until somebody is locked into a program with him, whether it's Jason Jordan. You know, there's a name for you. He's doing an open challenge on TV tomorrow night. Maybe Jason Jordan comes out. You know, and that could, and maybe they actually do have a match, but maybe it's only the beginning of a longer storyline because Jordan is ready to come back. Last time we saw him, he was in a program, you know, he's partners with Seth Rollins. They could pick that up where they left off, and they could build Jordan up as a challenger for the championship. Well, I mean, we'll see tomorrow night. I like the open challenge gimmick when they did it originally for the U.S. title. It worked for John Cena when he did that the first time. And even after that, right? AJ Styles picked up the gimmick on SmackDown for a little bit. Bobby Roode did it when he was the U.S. champion for a little bit. And by the time Bobby Roode was doing it, it was like, all right, I guess this is wearing a little bit thin, but okay. Now they're doing it with the Intercontinental title, and it just reeks of laziness to me. I think Seth can make it work. I think he can go out there and have, you know, entertaining matches with almost anybody probably on that roster. But I just look at the reliance, the over-reliance on the open challenge gimmick, which is nice once or twice, but now by the third or fourth time, it's like, can these writers not come up with compelling storylines anymore? I mean, are they just incapable of coming up with compelling storylines in this company? Are they that devoid of ideas that we have to have open challenges every other week? And when we're not doing open challenges, we have, you know, money in the bank matches where people are just cashing in left and right, you know, money. Like, they take good ideas sometimes and they just beat them into the ground. And they rely on them way too much to where they don't really mean as much and they're not as fun anymore. Call me a sucker. Maybe I'm just an old school guy, but I kind of like it when they come up with some kind of an issue one-on-one between people. I could go on and on about all the multi-man matches. Last year, how comical it was with the women. Four ways, five ways. And normally I'd be a big fan of four ways and five ways with women, but somehow WWE got me to hate it. So they just have to stop relying so much, I think, on all the gimmicks and just try to come up with some ideas for some of these guys. Like Seth and Jordan, I just got done talking about, right? I was getting into that whole story between them before Jason Jordan got hurt. All they have to do is just pick up with that. There was a solid story there. Just pick up with that and just build off of that. That's all you got to do. Maybe the open challenge is a gateway to get Jordan to come back. Maybe that's the idea. If that's the case, then I'm okay with it. But this is the fourth time now that they're doing this open challenge thing with one of these mid-card titles. And I call it a mid-card title. I guess, really, at this point, the Intercontinental Championship on Raw is the top title in the company. I think that it is, in my view, it's already sort of replaced the Universal title as the title that everybody wants to go after. It's the most sought-after championship. It's the one that we get to see defended the most often. Seth Rollins, in a way, is now, and has been, I guess, the top champion on Monday Night Raw. I mean, at this point, who could possibly care about the big red fruit roll-up belt? I mean, you know, we never see it. We know we're not going to get title defenses on television. We know we're not going to get title defenses probably until SummerSlam. That it looks as though we are not going to see Brock Lesnar defend the championship until August. So for all intents and purposes, Seth Rollins is the top champion in the company. He is the top champion on Raw, certainly. So they're doing an open challenge gimmick, I guess, with their top title. I can't really call it a mid-card belt anymore. So I guess if they've succeeded in doing one thing, they have finally established the Intercontinental Championship as a top title in the company. So all you people out there who were so upset over the years, and I was one of them, at how low on the totem pole it felt like that belt had become, we should all be thrilled, because now the Intercontinental title is as prestigious as it's been since its heyday, if you think about it. Finn Balor, in the main event on this show, earned a spot in the Men's Money in the Bank match with a win over Roman Reigns and Sami Zayn in a triple threat match. He pinned Zayn with the coup de grace. Reigns was setting up for a spear to Sami when Jinder Mahal interfered. He grabbed Roman's leg. Jinder was very upset because earlier in the show, he had been denied the opportunity by Kurt Angle to compete for a spot in Money in the Bank. And so he felt Roman didn't deserve it. He came out. He did something about it. And Sami hit Reigns with the Huluva kick. That took him out of the picture. Balor then took over and he got the win. So it looks like the plan is for Roman Reigns to feud with Jinder Mahal, at least until Brock Lesnar is ready to end his vacation and come back and wrestle again. Now, on the one hand, I'm happy for Balor. Balor gets a spot in Money in the Bank and not Roman Reigns, and that's great. On the other hand, we're getting Roman Reigns versus Jinder Mahal. I can think of few matches that I would rather see less, that sound less exciting to me, than Roman Reigns against Jinder Mahal. And that's more a knock on Jinder than it is on Roman. I'm not really even hating on Roman so much. But I'd rather watch a literal match. I'd take one match out of a matchbook. Doesn't even have to be lit. I would just sit there and stare at it, then watch a Roman Reigns-Jinder Mahal feud. Only Randy Orton, I think, against Jinder Mahal could possibly be worse. That to me is and always will be nightmare fuel. But if the idea is to feud Reigns with Jinder to ensure that he gets cheered, because that's what this looks like, right? This looks like this is Vince McMahon's latest plan to attempt to get the people behind Roman Reigns. Let's put him in there with a guy who everybody absolutely hates, and they'll have no choice but to cheer for Roman Reigns. The only problem with that is that all it's going to do is get people to cheer Jinder Mahal. they're going to get Jinder cheered. Now, not by everybody, of course. I'm not saying he's going to come out and get a thunderous ovation or anything like that, but this is not going to work out the way that they hope it will. And it is really amusing to me to see them keep trying like this instead of just embracing the hate. They keep on working against it. This goes to the whole thing about people being miscast in this company. Heel and face, this guy should be a face and he's a heel, and vice versa. Roman Reigns at this point should be turned for his own good, but they're not turning him. And Bobby Roode is a babyface when he should be a heel because nobody cares about him. The only problem is you can't turn everybody heel. I understand that. But there are... Look, I'm sure if we sat and did a talent evaluation of these two rosters, we could pick out at least half a dozen people who should probably, you know, go from one side to the other. And then you just have to try to balance it out, right? You gotta try at least to have a relatively even number of heels and babyfaces on the roster. Maybe to even things out, you got to call up a couple more names from NXT. Because they have a wealth of talent down there right now that you could choose from. But... it is very amusing to see how hard they try, how little effort they put into other things. But on this one thing, they just will not give up. They just will not get, they will not embrace the hate. They just keep working against it. SmackDown Live was from Baltimore, Maryland this past week. 2,000 votes in our poll, 68% thumbs up, 32% thumbs down. So a much better percentage than Raw. Paige opened the show. And she called Backlash a smashing success. And the minute she did that, she instantly lost all credibility with me. I'm already waiting for them to appoint a new GM. We have three Money in the Bank qualifying matches on this show. Miz beat Jeff Hardy in the opener to qualify. This was really good. Jeff hit a twist of fate. He landed a Swanton Bomb. He got all of it, too. This wasn't like, oh, well, he only got some of it. No, he landed right on top of Miz. He went for the pin. And I thought that the match was won. I was about to hang my head in shame. But Miz countered that into a crucifix pin for the win. And I liked the finish because nobody was expecting it. I wasn't expecting it. At least the first few rows weren't expecting it based on their reaction. It was a counter to the Swanton that I don't remember seeing. But I also think it did kind of make the Swanton look a little bit weak. Not a big deal because these days everybody kicks out of everybody's finish. So it's not a huge deal, but the right man won. Miz, you guys know if you listen to this podcast, Miz is my pick to win Money in the Bank this year. I said this in January before anybody else was making Money in the Bank predictions. I said Miz is my pick to win the briefcase. I outlined exactly how I would do it. Daniel Bryan, the whole deal. I'm sticking with my guess on that. And it makes sense, too, I think, to have a SmackDown guy win, seeing as how the Raw champion is never around. Probably better off having a SmackDown guy take the briefcase. Renee Young tried to get a word backstage with Nakamura, asking him if things were finished between him and AJ Styles. He said, no, speak English. Renee challenged him this time, and she actually showed some personality. She showed human characteristics, which Renee does all the time. I'm not saying she doesn't, but it was refreshing because we don't often get to see that with the other Android announcers that we see in these backstage segments. She said, look, we know you can speak English. And she wanted a serious answer out of him. And Nakamura said AJ was nuts. People in the crowd laughed. And he said that they are not finished yet. I'm not finished with you, is basically what he said. He's the SmackDown version of Strowman. Only instead of get these hands, it's get these feet. Charlotte beat Peyton Royce to advance to the Women's Money in the Bank match. You know, it's a shame with the Iconics. They have done nothing since coming up. They lose 9 times out of 10. These matches that they've had and Peyton has had, frankly, have not been very good. And so maybe there's a reason why they're not really doing anything of any great consequence on this show right now. Charlotte won with the figure eight. Charlotte did not have a great week aside from qualifying. She did qualify for Money in the Bank, but... she's having surgery soon to repair a ruptured breast implant. She apparently ruptured it before WrestleMania, but did not want to miss the match with Asuka. And then she ended up wrestling at Backlash. And so I think, I don't know when, they're on a European tour right now. I suppose when they get back, she'll have it done. I don't know how long the recovery is, but she'd have to be okay for Money in the Bank. And then this week, like I said, they're overseas. They were at a live event in Oberhausen, Germany. And she got some of her teeth knocked out by a Carmella super kick. And a fan leaned in for a selfie with her at ringside after the match, and she just put her hand up to her mouth and she said, "I can't take a picture, I lost my teeth." Like a granny over here. And she flew, it was bad enough, she had to fly all the way back to the States. She had dental surgery, and she was flying right back to Europe to finish the remainder of the tour. And let's take a moment here, I think, just to appreciate sometimes the schedule, when I read the schedule that these, the guys and the girls, whichever brand, you know, that they're on, and you go right from WrestleMania, I think they may have been internationally after WrestleMania. I don't know if they went somewhere else before Saudi Arabia, but they went to Saudi Arabia. I guess the women didn't go, but some of the crew anyway went to Saudi Arabia, came back. Then there's a 2-week European tour. Then there's something else. I mean, this schedule, it's not as bad as it was in the 80s where the schedule was just inhumane. But I don't envy the amount of travel that these people are on. And it's not like it's just a regular job. Like, if you're flying to some other country on a 15-hour flight on business, right? Chances are, on business means that you're having business meetings. Maybe you're going to a conference. You're sitting in an office somewhere at a desk. You know, they're traveling for business. But when they go, you know, physically, they have to be up and ready. And I'm sure they're tired and jet-lagged. And then they come back here, and it's not even like they can go straight home. They got to go right to the next city for Raw and SmackDown. And then sometimes we'll get a show where it's like, man, this show sucked. Everybody seemed like they were completely lifeless and lethargic. And I think we have to start getting into the habit maybe of looking at the calendar, because I'm willing to bet that in a lot of those cases, it's because they've just been running all over the place and they never, you know, get a break when it comes to these tours. They come back and it's, you know, right back to the next show. And yeah, I mean, hey, I don't know how they do it. I mean, I any flight longer than 6 hours, I absolutely just, it's like a no for me. So as much as I'd love to one day go to Japan and go to Australia, what really scares me off is just the length of those flights. And they do this all the time. It's, yeah, I mean, I guess some of them must enjoy it, right? You get to see the world, you get to travel and take pictures and sightsee and all that stuff, but how much of that do they really get to enjoy? You know, once you get there, like the European tour, 2-week European tour, they're hitting city after city, night after night. I don't think they're spending more than a night in each city. It's like, how do you even know where you are? I wouldn't even have any concept of what time it is if that was me. So much appreciation and much respect, I think, to them for these international tours, which are crazy. Mandy Rose pinned Becky Lynch with a roll-up in 2 minutes. The announcers were making it a point to talk about Becky being in a slump, and so it seems like it's part of the story they're trying to tell. I can only hope it's the start of a storyline that builds to her starting to win, kind of like Johnny Gargano in NXT. Johnny Gargano was losing and losing and losing, and he was ready to hang it up. He thought, look, I can't hang. I don't belong here. All of a sudden, he started winning matches, and before long, he was the number one contender for the championship. And he had, you know, one of the best, actually, if we're talking about the match with Cian Almas, had what I thought was the best match in NXT history. You know, he didn't win the title, but it was a great story to follow along with. And, you know, Gargano's one of those guys, kind of the scrappy underdog. It's easy for people to get behind him. People genuinely like him. I get the impression people genuinely like Becky Lynch. And they want to root for her, but, you know, they've not given us a reason to really do that. And I hope this is the start of something that leads to maybe a championship win over Carmella at SummerSlam. Because I think, you know, Becky Lynch is one of those names that's been severely underappreciated on the roster and underutilized for a while now. If it's a matter of her just having to wait her turn, like, there's nothing wrong with her. There's no heat on her. It's just not her turn. And we just don't have a role for her right now, but we'll kind of come back to you at a certain point. Then, okay, but you know, they need to tell that story, I think, as the underdog who kind of falls on tough times, starts doubting herself, and then starts winning matches, and she gets the crowd behind her, and all the way to her big title win at SummerSlam. Main event was Rusev against Daniel Bryan in a Money in the Bank qualifier. How can I choose? Why must you do this to me? This was fun. This was a fun little match here. Crowd was split at times. They were chanting for both guys. Bryan had Rusev set up for the finish. Aiden English pulled Rusev out of the ring to safety. Bryan wiped them both out. Back inside, he followed that up with a missile drop kick, and so now he's going for the running knee. Rusev, though, catches him with a knee of his own right to the breadbasket. There's a word you don't hear the announcers use anymore. I miss that. I miss all those monsoonisms that I learned so much of when I was a kid watching WWE. So he hit him right in the breadbasket, and then Rusev hit a Machka kick, and he got the clean pin. 1, 2, 3, right in the middle of the ring. People were shocked. I was shocked. And I was also really happy for Rusev to see this guy get a big win like that on TV. He earned himself a spot in a big pay-per-view match. They tried to play up how much Brian has been through. This was sort of their way of excusing it or coming up with a reason, like why Brian lost. They were talking about just the last few weeks that he's had. I mean, the guy went 76 minutes in the greatest Royal Rumble match. He got his chest chopped to shit by Roderick Strong. He was kept off TV that week in storyline for fear of a chest infection. Then he had the match with Big Cass at Backlash, and then Cass beat him up after the match. And so the story is that Brian was so worn down. Like, he just came back. He's just been, you know, burning the candle at both ends, and he's been beaten down and beaten down, and it was just too much. And Rusev was the beneficiary, and Rusev got the win here. And so Rusev now joins The Miz, Braun Strowman, and Finn Balor so far in the men's Money in the Bank match. They went off the air with a shot of Brian. He was sitting on the apron all disappointed and dejected. Fans were chanting his name as they faded out. I thought this was really good. And then I look online on my timeline on Twitter and even in the Facebook group, and I just don't understand all the people who I saw debating, like, are they burying Daniel Bryan? I can't believe he lost. This company doesn't know what they're doing. They're ruining him. They had Rusev, beat the guy in one match. It was a competitive match. I thought Bryan took most of the match. He fell short in the end, but Rusev got the win. I thought that's what everybody wanted. Everybody goes around chanting Rusev Day. Oh, they should do more with Rusev. Rusev should leave. He should go work the indies and make a lot of money and be a big star. I thought that's what people wanted. I thought everybody was celebrating Rusev Day. They wanted to see the guy get pushed. He just got pushed right into the Money in the Bank match. Brian didn't need the win. He has to lose. Sometimes. He can't be the underdog, which is the role for him that works best, I think. He can't be that if he wins more than he loses. I mean, I used to shake my head whenever the announcers I would hear, they would try to paint John Cena on TV as he's the underdog, like in some of his feuds. Back when he was still, you know, inarguably the top star in the company, he was still on TV every weekend at all the pay-per-views, and he would lose sometimes, but he would win way more than he would lose. But Michael Cole would not stop Michael Cole, I'm sure per the instructions given to him, coming on the air and talking about what an underdog John Cena. Are you kidding me? What show have you been watching? That's what I used to think. So, you know, Brian has to lose sometimes. Now, someone posted a link in the Facebook group to a What Culture video. I don't know who this person is in the video. I don't know who they were, but you watch that video and you would think the sky is falling. His first clean loss since his return, and like in I think in the title or something, it was like, is he ruined? Is he ruined? What are you talking about? It's no wonder this company doesn't take fan feedback seriously. Rusev wins a match and all of a sudden it's Armageddon. Now there was a story this week. Ryan Satin broke it on Pro Wrestling Sheet. He was claiming that Big Cass, who was not on the show this week, has heat with officials backstage for going off script during that segment on the go-home show to Backlash, where he beat up the little person who was dressed up as Daniel Bryan. Apparently, he was told to boot him in the face, and that's where the segment was supposed to end. He pitched the idea of, why don't we take it one step further, and I beat him down a little bit more. You know, I rain blows down upon him. And that idea was shot down by whoever it was. I don't know if it was a writer or an agent, probably the agent for the segment, whoever it was, said no. So what he did was, he went over that person's head, he went right to Vince McMahon. Look at this guy. Look at this guy over here. Mr. Big Shot over here. Just came back from an injury, hasn't done anything in this company, at least not as a single. It's like he's kind of starting out from scratch in a way. He's a main roster rookie, and he takes the issue right to the boss. You know what? I actually like that. That's the sort of thing that you hear Vince McMahon talking about, claiming that he likes to see. He supposedly likes it when people take the initiative and do things like that. That's what he says. Remember, just don't piss anybody off, pal. But supposedly, Vince loves it. I've heard Triple H countless times. Vince loves it when people go to his office. He's got an open door policy. He wants people to come out of their shell and come and express themselves and go to the bar. Great. Then he should love this. Well, Vince shot him down too. So that's at least two different people, including the boss, who said no, which is certainly his prerogative. So, you know, while I give Cass a lot of credit for doing what he did, supposedly, right, going right to Vince, and he obviously felt very strongly about this idea, the fact is he got shot down. He was told no, you stick to the script. So what did he do? He went out there, and he went off script. He booted the little guy, then he mounted him, and he started punching him. When he got backstage, people were not very happy with him. And the video on YouTube that they put up did not include the punches. They kind of edited that out. He lost to Brian at Backlash, and then he was kept off TV entirely this week. Not even so much as a backstage promo. He just was not on the show. Now, like I said, I admire the guy that he felt that strongly about this, that he felt like he had to just take this to the boss. And I do think that overscripting of these shows, it does hurt the product. I think it's a very big problem. You also need to do what your boss tells you to do, right? He stood up for himself, he pitched the idea, he got shot down, and then went right to his boss, which is cool. Then his boss said no. Once that happens, your only option is just do what you're told. And he didn't do that. So what's going to happen? You're going to get punished in some way. That's what happens. If his punishment was tapping out in his first big singles match and then being kept off TV for a week, that's not the end of the world. Guys have suffered way worse. But if I'm directing a film and one of my actors comes up to me and says, I think we should do this scene this way, I'm not really feeling the way that you want me to do it. Or, we'll do it that way, but why don't we add this to it? And I tell him, no, I'm paying you to do it this way. I cashed you for the part to play it this way. And then he goes and does it the other way. I wouldn't be very happy about that. And he would be lucky not to lose the role altogether. He'd be lucky to still have his job. And for God's sakes, of all the things to get heat for, I mean, I've heard Paul Heyman talk about his time at WWE Creative and how he had to pick his battles, right? You got to pick your battles with Vince and Stephanie and choose which hill to die on, because there are just some things that aren't worth fighting for. There are some things that are more important to fight for than others. Of all the things to take a chance on, you pick the beatdown of a little guy in a meaningless TV segment that's going to be forgotten a week later. You got to pick your spots, dude. Some things are worth fighting for. This was not one of those things. Does make me wonder, though, if maybe Cass was the one who was supposed to beat Brian in the main event on Tuesday and earn a spot in Money in the Bank. I mean, I'm happy that Rusev got the spot, but it does feel like it kind of came out of nowhere. I would think it's possible that one mistake cost Cass a Money in the Bank spot. I mean, I don't think we can discount the possibility that that's what happened here. That's why it was so shocking to see Rusev get the win.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
NXT this week opened with a Ricochet in-ring promo. I did not really know what to expect. The last time I saw Ricochet do an in-ring promo was in New Japan, and he was mimicking The Rock. So I was preparing myself to kind of shield my eyes here. But this wasn't too bad. I mean, except for the whole sockless loafer look. That was pretty bad. He was about to tell us the one thing he was saying that's on my mind right now. And fans in the crowd started chanting, "Socks? Is it socks?" they said. And Ricochet said, "No, it's not socks. No, it's the NXT Championship." And that brought out Velveteen Dream. He mocked Ricochet's socks. No, I'm kidding. He mocked Ricochet's one and only nickname. He said, "No matter how many flips or flops you do, make sure to land in the back of the line behind me, which is where you belong." And he tried a sneak attack. Ricochet was waiting for him. That's a match I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to that. Ricochet against Velveteen Dream. Two guys who should have big futures on the main roster. I kind of cautioned myself when I say that, but you would look at a guy like Ricochet and think, they can't possibly fuck this up, can they? Can they? Please tell me not. We got footage from last week. Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch were backstage. They were confronting Pete Dunne, asking him to be their partner against the Undisputed Era. And in doing so, they also said, I think it was Birch who said that they didn't like him, and they actually called Dunn a piece of garbage. And Dunn, for some reason, still agreed to be their partner. I guess his hatred for the Undisputed Era is far greater than the great offense that you would think somebody would take to being called a piece of garbage. Wouldn't the strategy be that you would want to butter somebody up if you wanted something out of them, right? I don't know that I would employ the strategy of insulting them and calling them a piece of garbage, but in this case, it worked. Last week, Vanessa Bourne interrupted a Dakota Kai promo, called her a scaredy cat. You could call me a lot of names. You can insult my family, but I'll be damned if you're going to call me a scaredy cat. You know what was really scary here in this match? Vanessa Bourne on offense. Thankfully, Dakota beat her. Pinned her with this new flipping backstabber type move that I don't think I've seen her use before. And Shayna Baszler came out. And the storyline the past few weeks has been that Dakota Kai is absolutely terrified of Shayna Baszler. The mere sight of her sends chills down her spine. It's like something out of a horror movie. Dakota Kai reacts to Shayna Baszler the way that I reacted to Backlash about two matches into the show. So Baszler put Bourne in the choke. Dakota just watched and then walked out. Didn't try to help her at all. Backstage, Kathy Kelly tries to get an interview with Dakota. All of a sudden, Shayna shows up. And she dared Dakota to do something. Kick her in the face. Go ahead, do something. And when she didn't, Shayna left. You see? Let that be a lesson. If you ignore the bully, eventually they will leave you alone. And so next week, actually, did I ever tell the story of the lunchroom brawl that I started when I was in the seventh grade? I don't remember if I've told this story before. It was on the subject of bullies. It was the first fight that I ever remember being in my entire life. And I use that word loosely. You'll know why in a second. But there was this kid. We'll call him Paul. And Paul had a screw loose. There was something wrong with this kid, and I think it was probably a very, what's the word I'm looking for? A dysfunctional family situation at home, which is kind of sad to look back on it. But anyway, he was not a well-behaved kid, and I kind of felt bad for him. But something was definitely off. I mean, this kid would bring gun magazines to school and sit there reading them and talk about all the things he wanted to do to people. It was really, if that happened today, he would be in Guantanamo Bay right now. But back then, nobody really thought anything of it. So anyway, Paul just kept annoying the crap out of me. He was in, you know, the same class as me, and he would just do stupid things just to get under people's skin, and I was no different. He would touch me and then deny that he touched me. He would go to touch me, but he would stop short and say, "I'm not touching you. See, I'm not touching you. You can't do anything about it." Just really trying to get under my skin. And look, anybody who knew me back then would be the first to tell you, I'm the last person to get in any kind of trouble. So I wasn't interested in, you know, pushing him back or slapping him around or, you know, throwing something at him. I did bite somebody in kindergarten once, but that was different. They deserved it. So in this case, you know, I was not interested in getting in any kind of trouble. I just kept to my friends and kept to myself. Well, we're in the cafeteria for lunch. And it's like prison, you know, where everybody sort of sticks together with their little cliques. Everybody goes and sits with their friends at their table. I'm sitting with my friends. Paul decides to sit right across from me. Same table, right on the opposite side, right across from me. And he starts kicking me under the table. He starts kicking me in the shin. And I warned him. I told him, stop. And he wouldn't stop. I said, you better stop or else. Now, I don't even think I knew what that meant. All I knew is that I wanted to punch him right in his fat face. That's about all I knew. So anyway, I warned him, I said, don't do it, but he kept doing it, he kept kicking me in the shin, and by the way, now every time I say the word shin, I think of Michael Cole calling Nakamura shin, so fuck you, Michael Cole. So he kicks me in the leg and that one more time, and that's it, I've had enough. I very calmly turn to my friend, I tell him, watch my lunch, brought like a bag lunch with me, right? I said, watch my lunch, and I proceed to get up from the table. Now, Paul sees this, and he's excited. I mean, he's all happy. He got exactly what he wanted. He got to me. I've been gotten. So we both take our stances. I would say we're probably standing, I mean, I don't know, maybe 10 feet from each other. I mean, there's a little bit of distance between us. And now it's really just a matter of who's going to throw the first punch. And nobody, I shouldn't say nobody. I mean, my friends were watching. They saw what was about to happen. But, like, everybody else was sort of in their own little zone. They didn't know that we were standing there in fighting position, ready to go at it. And he's waiting to see if I'm going to throw a punch, and I'm waiting to see what he's going to do. So finally, I decide I'm not waiting anymore. I'm taking my shot. And I lean forward. I sort of lunge forward. And I go to throw the punch. And I whiff. I mean, I wasn't even close to connecting. Okay, and Paul is no, this kid was no cruiserweight, okay? It's not like he has the reflexes of a cat or anything like that. Okay, he has more like the reflexes of a dead decomposing cat. But I miss. And as soon as I miss, I hear somebody, I don't know who, somebody at another table, it wasn't one of my friends, but somebody stands up and just yells, fight! Like you know, at the beginning of the Mortal Kombat matches, it'd be like, fight! Somebody just screams, fight! Which is what would always happen whenever a fight broke out in the cafeteria. Some idiot would yell fight, and pandemonium would ensue. And normally I was the one who was watching. It was like a car crash. You can't help but like not look away. Normally I was like, somebody else is fighting. Well, now I'm in the middle of all this, right? And anyway, long story short, I opened my eyes. And when I opened my eyes, I'm laying on the ground, and I see one of my friends also laying on the ground. He must have gotten shoved down. Everybody was just going crazy. And it's just havoc. And so I'm down, Paul's down. I don't know how he got down, but I didn't knock him down, but he's down. Other random kids are down. The security guards rush over. They take us away. Now I'm scared to death. I'm going to get suspended from school. I never got in any kind of trouble before, except kindergarten when I bit that kid for taking my Lego. So I'm like, I don't want to get suspended. They take us to the dean's office. All I could think about is, it just so happened that night was parent-teacher conferences, where the parents come to school, they meet with your teachers to find out how you're doing, and I'm thinking, what the hell are my parents going to say when they find out that I got suspended from school? You know, like, how do I get out of this? There's got to be a way out of this. So the dean, eventually, he kind of comes back over and he says, I called your parents, nobody was home. And he says, look, I'll tell you what, because he could see I was, like, really... emotionally, I was a little off kilter. You could tell how sort of anxious I was. And he says, look, I'll tell you what, I'll give you $20. If you take that money and walk to the supermarket, there was a supermarket like two blocks away, right by my house, actually. This was in when I lived in Canarsie in Brooklyn. He goes, if you walk to the supermarket, and by the way, for those of you who are from Brooklyn and know the area, it's East 79th Street and Flatlands Avenue. That's where I used to live for many years. He goes, if you walk to the supermarket and you buy a few bottles of soda for tonight, for the conferences, I won't suspend you. This is what he says to me. I can get out of this if I just take the money, do him this favor, leave the school, walk to the supermarket, buy the soda, and bring it back. I'm thinking, this is great. I can do that. My parents will be none the wiser. This is fantastic. Paul gets suspended. I get out of it. It's perfect. Forget how incredibly stupid it was for this guy to send me off school property. I mean, if I got hit by a car, this guy would have been out of a job. But I walk over. I buy the soda. I'm walking back, and who should see me but my father? I don't even remember why he was home, but he was home. It was like the middle of the afternoon, and he was home, and I see him, he sees me, he comes over, he says to me, what the hell are you doing out of school? I didn't know what to say. I said, the dean asked me to pick up some soda for the parent-teacher conferences. And he says, that's interesting, because the dean actually left a message on the answering machine at home saying that you got into a fight at school. And I just remember thinking, well, the jig is up, because, you know, my father had a short fuse. I never knew how he was going to react to things. Something would accidentally fall out of the fridge when he opened the door, and we'd end up with an obscenity-laced tirade and a hole in the wall. I just didn't know what to expect here. But he smiles, and he says, I'm proud of you, son, and he starts laughing. What a relief. He was genuinely proud of me, too, when he heard about that. I didn't tell him I whiffed on the punch, but it was sort of this nice little unexpected father-son moment. The point of all of this is, Shayna Baszler is a bully, and Dakota Kai better make sure that she connects on that first punch, or else they'll both end up in William Regal's office, okay? That's the larger point here. They panned over to Nikki Cross. She was standing off to the side. We didn't even know. We heard some laughing, and so they show her, so I guess we know why she was held back from going to SmackDown with the rest of Sanity, who has not debuted yet. And actually, Andrade Cien Almas and Zelina Vega, they are going to finally be making their SmackDown Live debut on TV this week. Almas may be the only person other than Miz, because I'm sticking with Miz, but he might be the only other person other than Miz who I would love to see win that Money in the Bank, because for him, as somebody new to the roster, it would be a huge win, and you could just have Zelina carry the briefcase around for however many months. He doesn't even have to hold the damn thing. He could have her hold it for him. So I look forward to him making his debut. We had the War Raiders beating Heavy Machinery here. You know, match was all right. It wasn't really terribly exciting. Me personally, I'm more into Heavy Machinery and Otis than I am the War Raiders. War Raiders are great wrestlers, I know, right? They've gone all over the world and had some great matches, but I still look at Otis and I go, this guy, when he gets to the main roster, this guy's going to be a star. He'll probably be a comedy character, but he'll be a star. In the main event, we had Tommaso Ciampa beating Cassius Ohno. Ciampa is the best heel in all of wrestling right now. He comes out, no music. All you hear are the fans booing as he comes to the ring. It's great. He won with a neck breaker, kind of a... I actually thought the finish was kind of flat. After the match, Ciampa ripped off his knee brace. He used it on Ohno, wrapped it around his face the way that Johnny Gargano did to him at TakeOver. He started screaming about Gargano and Candice. I really hope they've got a good match stipulation plan for that, what I'm sure is going to be a rematch in Chicago next month. They just had that unsanctioned match, which was fantastic. And an unsanctioned match is basically, I mean, it's basically a hardcore match. It's a no DQ match. So I'm thinking, what else could they do here? I already pitched on the show. I pitched the first ever NXT Hell in a Cell, if they want to blow the feud off between these two guys. If not that, if you don't want to confine them to the cell, even though everybody ends up finding a way out anyway, maybe they could do a false count anywhere match and they can let them brawl outside the building. But I hope they have a good stip, you know, plan for these two, because it's going to be interesting to see how they follow up that first match. Johnny Gargano is on a roll right now. He's got two NXT TakeOver main events to his name so far this year, and they've both been two of the greatest matches in the history of the brand. The first match with Almas in January being, in my opinion, the best. And so you come off two matches like that, it's like, boy, you got some big expectations there. But I think if anybody can top them, it's those two guys. Let's get to some mailbag questions here, and then we'll wrap it up with a replay of the Mother's Day segment from last year. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Dave from Orlando, do you think Vince McMahon takes his fans for granted? Does he truly not care about them? After last week's pay-per-view and the backlash, pun intended, that it received, I'm starting to wonder if there is truth to that. What say you? I wouldn't say that he doesn't care about the fans based on one crappy pay-per-view. But yeah, the fact is, I mean, his company is making more money now than it ever has before. That's true. His ratings are down from where they had been once before. And yet, he's about to cash in on what will probably be, I mean, it's almost guaranteed it will be, the biggest television rights deal in company history. It's just a matter of how many hundreds of millions of dollars are they going to get? They're going to get $200 million, $500 million? Is it going to be from NBC Universal? Is it going to be from Fox? That's really the only question at this point. So you look at that and you say to yourself, well, why shouldn't he take the fans for granted? Is it any wonder why he would? I mean, I don't honestly think it's a case where he doesn't care about the fans. I think he cares. I just think he has his view of what he thinks they want to see. If they don't see it now, then, you know, damn it, we got to make them see it. In time, they'll see it. They'll see that I'm right and they're wrong. I'll teach them. I'm smarter than them. I think it's more a case of that. But you know, he just strikes me from all accounts, and it's hard to get a read on Vince McMahon because we've not met. Well, I mean, I've met him before, but I don't know him. I've not had the chance to really seriously, interact with him for more than, you know, 15 seconds, 20 years ago, but it's tough to get a read on this guy. You just kind of go by what other people talk about in their interactions with him. And when you piece everything together, the one picture it paints is that he is one stubborn SOB. And you look at some of the booking decisions he's made with some of these people, and you can see exactly why. You can see how stubborn he really is. He's got an idea, he'll dig his heels in, and he won't let go. And I think he expects that eventually people will come around to it. St. Clair from Los Angeles, Which do you think has done a better job of making members of the roster in each title feel more important, the original brand split or the current one? I'm not a fan of either brand split, personally, at least the way they've played out. I mean, of the two, I would say the first one was better. SmackDown at the beginning there, 2002, 2003, SmackDown was the big beneficiary of that first split. And then later on, you fast forward, you know, 5 years or whatever, 4 or 5 years, and Edge was a big beneficiary, I think, of the brand split. It got him away from Triple H. It got him away from John Cena on Raw. And it gave him a show of his own that he could take over and take on his shoulders. And I think he ran with it. And I think as far as titles go, on the whole, they've lost a lot of their value, perceived value, through, I think, both brand splits, especially the first one, the World Heavyweight title. I mean, once they started giving up on the idea of that first brand split, the big gold belt became a mid-card title. The big gold belt of, quote-unquote, the SmackDown belt literally became a belt that was defended in the opening match on Monday Night Raw. But I will say this, if there's one title that has been somewhat restored during this latest split, it is the Intercontinental Championship. The IC title in the mid-2000s was a total afterthought. There was a period of about 7 or 8 straight WrestleMania shows where the title was not even defended. 7 or 8 WrestleManias, that's 7 or 8 straight years where the title was not even defended at WrestleMania. And this is a championship that was defended in some of the more memorable matches in WrestleMania history. If you look at the history of that event, Savage Steamboat, Hogan Warrior, Bret and Piper, Shawn and Razor. And for it to be, you know, or for it to not be defended for that long tells you all you need to know about the standing of that title there in the mid-2000s. Now, over the last year or two, there's been much more focus on that championship, in part because we have a part-time Universal Champion on Raw. Brock Lesnar not defending that belt has effectively made the IC belt the top title on Monday Night Raw. I think The Miz, to his credit, did his part to make that belt feel special again. When I interviewed him at the 2K17 event a couple of years ago, he took issue with something I said. He went on this rant about how hard he's worked to make that title feel special again, like it used to when Bret Hart had it and Mr. Perfect had it. And I think it was sort of half shoot, half staying in character when he was on his little rant. But you could tell that, you know, as an old school fan, Miz really genuinely wanted to make that title feel important again. Seth Rollins now is doing a lot to make that title feel special. Actually, it's funny, Miz did an interview this week with Sports Illustrated, and he talked about how much it upsets him when the WWE title does not main event shows. I agree. I'm in the same camp with him. And then in the same interview, he said his goal was to win Money in the Bank, cash it in, and become the champion. I hope it happens, mostly because I want to look back at the end of the year and have that as one of the predictions I made that came true. I picked Baron Corbin last year, and what a waste of a cash in that was. But I said in January, he wins Money in the Bank. Okay, Daniel Bryan takes the championship from him at WrestleMania next year. And I know some people have said, well, that match doesn't need a championship. No, it doesn't. It doesn't, but I think it makes it that much more important. And what a great video package. I mean, as far as WrestleMania main events go, imagine if it is Bryan and Miz as one of the main events next year. It probably wouldn't end the show, because I still feel Charlotte and Rousey is probably the goal for them next year as far as a main event. But imagine the video package that they could put together for that match. They can go all the way back to that very first season of NXT when Miz was Bryan's pro. That's how long, in effect, I mean, that's how long this story has really been playing out for. And I would not at all mind if it was a championship match at WrestleMania. Fernando from Bogota, Colombia. I'm going to be in your neck of the woods soon. Seeing the success of people like Jinder Mahal and Drew McIntyre after leaving WWE and making a comeback, who in the current mid or low card in the company do you see as a future WWE champion or headliner if they were to leave for a few years, improve their skills on the Indies, UK, or Japan, and then come back? I know you've mentioned Dolph Ziggler, and you were a fan of Tyler Breeze in NXT, but could someone like Fandango, Alicia Fox, Zack Ryder, or Bo Dallas be seen as a real main eventer? I don't think any of those last four names that you mentioned at this point are main eventers. I don't think they'll ever be main eventers. So them, no. But you want some names? I'll give you some names. I'll give you the first name. Cesaro. Cesaro is the name that first comes to mind. He could absolutely be a top guy anywhere in the world right now if he wanted to be. If he wanted to leave and go away for a while and work Japan or work the Indies or work Mexico or wherever, he could do that. And when I say top guy, I don't necessarily mean the guy, like the John Cena or the Roman Reigns of WWE. Maybe he could be that for some other promotion. I don't see him ever being that for WWE, even if he leaves for 5 years and comes back. But I'm talking like in the main event mix. I'm talking top three or four guys in a promotion, wrestling for the world title, maybe being a world champion. Absolutely. Cesaro would be at or near the top of my list. I'll throw Rusev in there as well. Rusev, I think, could leave. I think he could have a lot of success and ride the wave of this Rusev Day stuff and then come back and be a top guy. And one other name I'll throw at you. And I answered a mailbag question a few months ago. Somebody asked me about the members of New Day. And of the three, who do I see having the most singles potential? Who could be a world champion one day of the three? And Xavier has done interviews saying it's got to be Kofi. He himself doesn't want to ever be world champion. Xavier would be happy to just be King of the Ring since it's a favorite from when he was a kid. He wants to see Kofi Kingston one day be the champion. I don't know that that's ever going to happen, but if I had to pick one member of New Day who I think could theoretically leave and then leave long enough for people maybe to forget some of the comedy stuff, then come back and be taken seriously as a headliner, I think Big E is the guy. I think if he ever dropped the New Day thing for a while, left and came back, I think he would do well. And I think he could get a big singles push. And then it's just a matter of seeing how far he can go with it. Maybe he flops. Maybe he excels. He may have the chance to, if he qualifies for that Money in the Bank match, because there's a match between the New Day and the Bar coming up on Tuesday. And I don't remember offhand how the rules are going to work, if it's the person who gets the winning fall. But one person from that match, I believe, will qualify for the men's Money in the Bank. And I think that person will probably end up being Big E. But those are the three names to me that stand out. Gabe from California. I was talking to my friend the other day, a casual WWE viewer, and we were talking about heels. He was saying that the heels on Raw and SmackDown don't really do heel things. I was thinking about that, and I don't see too many back rakes, eye pokes, grabbing the ref and giving a low blow like Ric Flair or Eddie Guerrero or Roddy Piper used to do. Do you think heels need to do more of that instead of just grabbing the tights in a roll-up? Well, Nutcracker Nakamura disagrees. There's been plenty of low blows on TV lately. WWE gave us a low blow on pay-per-view last weekend. It was called Backlash. But I agree on the larger point. I don't think we do see enough of that kind of thing. And I think they need to study what Tommaso Ciampa is doing right now in NXT. There is absolutely nothing redeeming whatsoever about that character. No theme music, no catchphrase, no crowd chant, no funny jokes. He might have a shirt. I don't know if he has any merch right now. I didn't see any when I checked WWE shop other than the old DIY shirts. And he just goes out there and he's, you know, got more of a vicious streak to him. He cheats when he can. He attacks people when the match is over. There is nothing redeeming or likable right now about Tommaso Ciampa. Now, not every heel can be that way. I think you want heels like that. I think you also want chicken shit heels. I mean, you can have a little bit of variety there, but I think we don't see probably enough of that. We probably should see more of that. I think it's interesting that, you know, you say your friend is only a casual fan, and this is an observation coming from supposedly a casual fan. And so if casual fans are thinking that, then I would imagine probably a lot of hardcore fans feel the same way. Robbie from California, do you think WWE choosing Las Vegas for a WrestleMania is pretty much a lock? I was there last week and saw the Raiders' new stadium being built. It's right across the freeway from the Strip. To me, the location of the stadium and Vegas being a city that you can plan an entire week around makes it obvious that they will choose it once the stadium is finished. What do you think? Well, they don't choose stadiums anymore so much as the stadiums choose them, right? The cities choose them. They put in all the bids and WWE makes its choice based on who wows them the most. Which city is going to make WrestleMania feel like the biggest deal possible? And maybe there's tax incentives that they can offer. And the city itself, the location itself matters. Vegas is a vacation destination for a lot of families and a lot of people. And then ultimately they make their choice. If Vegas bids for it, I think it's a lock that they're going to get it. The question is when. The target date, I looked up the target date for the stadium to be finished. The targeted date of completion is the summer of 2020. So probably somewhere around June or July is the projected completion date of the stadium. I read that the Super Bowl could be there as soon as 2023. I think WWE would love to run a WrestleMania there before it gets the Super Bowl. I think if they could beat the Super Bowl to the punch, that's something they probably would be enticed by. So I think, if I had to take a guess, which is all this is, I think there's a pretty good chance that WrestleMania comes to Vegas either in 2021 or 2022. And they can come back to Las Vegas. Sin City WrestleMania. The marketing sells itself. So thank you to everybody who sent in questions this week. There are a bunch I just couldn't get to, but we'll save those for another day. Keep emailing me your questions, thesolemonster@gmail.com. I said early on in the show what I wanted to do was go back and replay the segment from last year, my favorite segment I ever did. Been doing this show now for 10 and a half years. And it was the Mother's Day Madness segment I did with Mama Monster here on the show 1 year ago. I still don't understand why I didn't think to do this earlier. 10 years I'm doing the show at the time, and only last year did I decide to have her on. I'm glad I did. I'm so happy I did. Because I would talk about her and her health struggles, and some of you guys would send messages of encouragement, and she always lit up whenever I would share that with her, or she would see it, you know, online sometimes. And I would joke with her. I said, boy, you're on my own show, you're more over than I am, which was true. But I had her on last year. I thought it would be kind of cool to do a Mother's Day segment and just talk to her. Talked about, you know, me being a young wrestling fan. She had to be subjected to it. What was that like? What, it wasn't like she grew up a wrestling fan. And then we did some fun trivia at the end, and I was impressed by how much she had retained. How much knowledge she had retained over the years, and things that she still remembered, and favorite wrestlers, and all that kind of stuff. And it was really cool. And in fact, after she passed away, there were a lot of family members who came to the service, and I actually mentioned that in the speech that I did, and a lot of people after the fact came up to me. They either didn't know that I did a podcast, or the ones that did know had no idea that she was on. And they were saying, oh, do you have the link? Is it still up? I said, yeah, absolutely. And a lot of them went and listened to it. And then they emailed me and after the fact and said, oh, this was great. You know, this was so cool. And so that was also really nice. But I wanted to replay the segment here since I was deprived of the opportunity to have her back on and do an encore, which is what I had been planning. Although it became pretty obvious to me in the last couple of months, that even if she was here, that probably was not going to happen. I didn't talk a whole lot. The first show back that I did after she died, I didn't really spend too much time talking about exactly what happened. And I still won't get into, too much in the way of specific details, only to say that, I would say it was the last 6 weeks that was just a complete and total nightmare. And as things got progressively worse, things started to happen and she was very uncomfortable, and it became more an issue of, you know, just comfort than anything else. For the love of God, is there anything we can do here? And the options were fairly limited. And then certain things started to happen, in terms of hallucinations and in terms of, her not being able to really communicate, to the point where, you know, my brother and I don't know how we did it, but I guess in situations like that, you do what you have to do. But for the entire month of March, you know, our life was pretty much consumed by, I would go to work, and straight from work, I would go to the hospital, and I would meet him there, and he was there, you know, all day, and I'd meet him, and we'd be there, and we'd be feeding her, and just all this, you know, just to sort of see her in that state is something I don't want that to be my sort of lasting memory. But it was as horrible as horrible can be, put it that way. It was not a very pleasant ending, and it was not honestly something I expected. Maybe I'm just being naive. I shouldn't be, because we've been going through this stuff for 15 years now. First the leukemia, then the breast cancer, and then the breast cancer coming back and the liver and all this stuff. And it was like, you see all these horrible things happening. But I guess, I don't know, I guess I just didn't think of things in terms of, well, it's not a brain thing. It's not a, so I didn't see her sort of falling apart in that way, the way she did at the end. That was a shock. And it was tough. It was really tough. But I wanted to play the segment again. Excuse me. I wanted to play the segment again. For those of you who never heard it, if you've already heard it, maybe you want to listen to it again. Listen to it with your mom, hopefully wherever you guys are. If you have a good relationship with your parents, not everybody does, and that's okay. Some people are estranged from their mother or father. So far be it for me to sit here and say, you should do this, you should do that. If that's not you, though, and you sort of just take them for granted, which I think we all do to some degree, do yourself a favor and don't do that this year. And whether you're seeing them, whether you're calling them, texting, whatever, just make sure you let them know how much you love them and how much you appreciate them. Because believe me, when the time comes that you are no longer able to do that, that is one of the things that you will miss the most. Take my word for it. So without any further ado, I now present to you Mother's Day Madness 2017 with a very special guest. I hope you all enjoy. I hope everybody out there has a happy Mother's Day, has a great week. I will not be here next week. It is a rare week off. I am going to be out of the country. I will be off the grid. I will not be able to record. I will not be able to upload. I won't be able to do anything. And I will be back the following week as normal for episode 548. So just FYI, no show next week, but we'll be back in 2 weeks. Until then, be well, stay safe. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. Happy Mother's Day to my mom. I love you always. And here is Mother's Day Madness from last year on the Sound Off. Take care, guys. So in honor of Mother's Day, I wanted to do something special. I have a very special guest here with me now, making her Sound Off debut. Can you believe it?
Yes.
Can you believe it? Can you believe it?
Finally.
This is the first time in 10 years. Now I do the show on Sunday, so that's right. 10 years worth of Mother's Days that I've actually had you here on the show.
Okay, well, but whose fault is that?
Well, you can blame me. That's fine. I have Mama Monster here with me, if she can keep a straight face, because you missed it as I tried to have her do a promo for me. It took about 7 or 8 minutes to get her to calm down. She couldn't keep a straight face when I tried to get her to actually say,
this is Mama Monster and you're listening to the Sound Off.
Okay, there you go. I didn't say you had to do a promo now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Does this feel weird?
Yes.
Oh, it does.
It does.
Well, that's why I haven't had you on until now.
Gee, thank you very much.
Well, but happy Mother's Day.
Thank you.
It is Mother's Day. We're all together here for this this holiday weekend here. We had a very nice dinner the other night.
Yes, we did.
You and I and the other son, we'll call him.
Call him Little Monster.
Little Monster. And so I have the best listeners in the world. They're always asking me, you know, how's your mom doing? You haven't said anything about her recently.
Very nice.
Because, yeah, I've talked about your health situation here on the show before.
Oh, I'm so
glad. You know, they know what you've been through and what you're going through now. And so they're always asking me questions. So how are you feeling right now?
I'm feeling okay. I mean, I'm hanging in there. Let's put it that way. You know, good days, bad days. To be expected.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm doing, you know, I'm doing okay. So far, so good.
Well, you were here for me this week. I had my own little
yes.
test.
And yes. So, yes, of course. Know, were, well, of course.
You were actually, very helpful. You were very helpful.
I went through that a couple of times.
I know.
So
that's why I was so freaked out, because I knew what you had gone through. And so now here I am in the same situation and I'm thinking to myself, this sucks.
Yes, it does.
But
I'm not going to say it doesn't.
But yeah, let's shift gears here for a second, because I don't think we've ever talked about this. Now, I know Dad was a wrestling fan,
mm-hmm.
obviously. I mean,
yes.
That's pretty much where
yes.
I got it from.
Yes.
But were you a wrestling fan? Did you ever watch it? Do you ever remember watching it
yes.
at all when you were
yes.
younger? You do.
Not when I was younger.
Well, I mean, when you were younger, maybe even before you got married or
No, actually, no. My great-grandfather did. He used to sit there when it was, I guess, Lucha Libre on Channel 47.
Oh, sure.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And he used to sit there and he used to make the, like, you know, with the punching this way and punching that way. He used to scream at the TV. Hmm. And everybody used to tell him, shut up!
Now, Dad was at the very first WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. That was in Madison Square Garden.
Yes, right? 1985.
And he bought me a WrestleMania shirt. I still have it. It's about six sizes too small. Yeah, it won't fit me now.
I was going to say, it might just about fit your head.
Yeah, but he was there in that shirt he bought at the event. Yes. And
of course he did. Yeah. He had to bring you home a little something. And that was the thing that he liked. And you watched with him. And I guess like fathers and sons watch baseball together or hockey together, whatever. His thing was wrestling. And that's what you used to watch together. And you seemed to, I guess, take to it so easily.
And you would watch? I mean, when he would watch?
I would watch him back in, Bob Backlund days?
Yeah, like early 80s. And,
when it was Bruno San Martino.
Okay.
Know, back.
Well, that predates me, though, by a few years.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm dating myself now, but...
Well, that's when I started watching.
Paying attention
watching,
to it.
Because he was. So it's like, you know, if you sit with somebody and they have the baseball game on, you're sitting and watching the baseball game. So it was kind of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then it became, you know, wrestling. And as the wrestling grew, and then you came along. And then, you know, he used to sit with him and watch that.
Then I came along. I knocked on the door one day. I just showed up one day. I said, hey, I'm here. And they took me in. Now, my earliest memory of being at a show, it was around Christmas time in, I think it was 1987. It was in Madison Square Garden. Main event was, go ahead. I want to see if you know this.
I don't remember the main event. Well, I remember Jimmy Hart.
Well, this is the only thing I remember, and I'm pretty sure it was the main event. It was Randy Savage, and it was the Honky Tonk Man. And Jimmy Hart was in a shark cage
above
the ring.
Right.
I remember that. I don't remember anything else.
I don't remember anything
from that show. But that I remember.
Well, that would stand out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that would be my early. But so you remember being at that show? Because
I
think all of us were there. I mean, you and Dad and me, and I don't know if the other one would have been, but
no, the little when 87.
87.
No, he wasn't.
Yeah.
No. Too young.
Now you also took me to the very first Fan Fest.
Yes.
That was back in 94, yes. WrestleMania 10.
Well, actually, how that came about was we went to wrestling, regular wrestling show, I guess on a Saturday, whatever it was, and they were handing out these tickets. And I used to say to you, just take, you know, you and your brother, just take whatever they give you. You don't know what it is. And it turned out to be actually comp tickets that I went to Madison Square Garden, turned them in, and it was free. I mean, it was like, I don't know, it was like $22 a ticket or something, but I got all those four tickets for free. So we went to FanFest, and that's when you met Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, well, it was a lot more casual then, too, because you were just bumping into wrestlers. So at one point, I literally remember bumping into Nikolai Volkoff. He's standing there. He's got no pants on. I'm bumping into this guy. I mean, now you could wait in a line for 45 minutes just to get one autograph. But
we did that for Shawn Michaels one time.
Well, some of them were more popular than others, but it was
not
just
at FanFest, but I remember doing that.
Right. Well, I'm talking specifically at FanFest, but it was very...
It was much different. They had displays. Like, they had the casket for The Undertaker.
Mm-hmm.
That was, like, a display that was there.
They had a doink tank.
Right. They had, it was, like, a U-shape kind of the ring, part of the ring. The front part had nothing, and the rest of it did. And that's where you met Earl Hebner. He was in there. There weren't as long lines, I guess, as there is now. Because I guess at that time, to be honest, I don't think it was as popular. It was coming of age at that time. And it wasn't as popular as it is now. At that time, I mean, you had lines, but not these mega lines and these humongous venues that you have now. You know, it was much, much different. But it was small, on a small scale. It was more personal, and it was nice. You met Vince McMahon.
People got a kick out of the photo when I put that on Facebook. I'm not even looking in the camera. He's got this great photo of me with Vince McMahon, and he's smiling into the camera.
Right.
I'm looking off probably at Doink getting
dunked. No.
What was I looking at?
I know exactly what you were looking at. Because
do I want to know?
Because Vince McMahon was going to take a picture with you,
yeah.
And you were too busy looking all over the place, and everyone's calling you, Jason, look this way, and you're turning around to see who's calling you, and we took the picture because we didn't have a long time to sit there and wait for you to sit there and pose, so we just took the picture. So it looks like you're looking at who knows what.
Now, we went to that fan fest. Why didn't we go to WrestleMania? Why? I don't remember you ever telling me why we didn't get tickets to actually go to WrestleMania.
I think it was too expensive. Because I remember, I mean, it was like, I remember the seats all the way down front were like $300 a seat.
Now, those are the seats all the way back now.
Yeah, well, that was
then. You could add a couple of zeros onto that for the front row.
Well, that was then. That was like the first maybe like 10 rows. But it was, and in those days, you got to keep the chair that you sat in.
Well, you get to do that now, too.
You do?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. You spend about, what, $5,000, $10,000 for a chair?
Give or take.
Go to Home Depot for $20.
That's what I say.
But I think that's why.
Now, I've never mentioned this before. You basically bankrolled the wrestling magazine that I used to do. I don't think I've ever mentioned this before.
No.
This was back when I was in junior high.
Cost me a fortune.
Well, this was back when I was in junior high. New Generation Magazine is what I called it.
Yes.
That was back in the days of Print Shop Deluxe, right on the old IBM Aptiva that we had.
Oh my gosh.
I put together these magazines every month, and they were every bit of, what, like 20, 30 pages probably?
Something like that.
Like that.
I still have one that you autographed.
I'd have this stack of pages, and she would take them to Staples every single month and have however many copies printed. I don't remember, you know, what.
Front and back.
At a loss.
It cost me $22 an issue.
I was the TNA of wrestling magazines. I would charge my friends something like 50 cents per copy. Was it a dollar?
A dollar.
Really?
Yes.
Was it a dollar?
It was a dollar.
Oh, good. I had the right idea.
Your brother was the banker.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And it would cost, but it would cost you something like, what was it, $60 or something?
$22.
Was it 20?
A copy.
Every single month.
I got nothing.
And she got nothing from it. So she.
I got nothing.
Nothing
from
to show
it.
For it.
No.
But that was like, it was my creative outlet.
It was constructive.
Right.
So I didn't really care.
Right.
It was fine.
Right.
It was the same thing as if you were reading something. I would buy you a bunch of books. So
right.
I didn't really mind it that much. It would have been nice to have been compensated a little bit. But
well, we could talk about that.
That's what.
But you were a wrestling mom. That's what.
That's
what you do.
That's what you do. Mm-hmm.
I called into PLJ. The local radio stations. This was a few years after that. Whenever they used to have ticket giveaways, and you could tell the popularity in wrestling back then. I think as compared to, I mean, now it's so much bigger. I mean, they're making so much more money. But just in terms of popularity, I don't think they really have that anymore. At least not on the local stations here. I don't hear them having, you know, raw ticket giveaways the way they were back in the late
90s. And I think some of that has to do with the fact that the way of wrestling has changed over the years. I really do. I personally think that's what it is. But times change, so everybody changes with the time.
Yeah, and they would have ticket giveaways for Raw. They would do house show giveaways to, like, live events at the Nassau Coliseum.
But they did that a lot.
Right, but, I mean, I won, like, 6 times.
That was all Raw shows.
I mean, one of those times that there was a live event at Nassau, one of those times. But all the other times, there was a SmackDown in there. Most of it was Monday Night Raw. The first time we ever went, the luxury box seats. That was in Jersey.
How could you beat that?
You can't. I mean, and
you
that
can't
was,
beat that. But you met Owen. You met.
Well, I was going to say. I mean, and it's kind of sad because half the people we met in that box are dead now. But you know, we met Mankind.
Yes.
We met Owen.
Right.
Met Luna.
Yes.
Who passed away?
Mark. She did.
Yeah, she passed away. And Mark Henry.
Mark Henry.
We met them all up in the box.
Yes.
Nice as can be.
Right.
Owen probably was the nicest out of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a you know, a fun experience.
Actually, they were all very nice.
Yeah. But I remember, you know, Foley, this was a few weeks after he had the big Hell in a Cell match where he fell off the cage and then he climbed back up and he fell off again. This was maybe, what, 2-3 weeks maybe after that pay-per-view? And I remember looking at him and he's just kind of sitting there and he looks...
Yeah, he was sitting there. Well, I mean,
he looks like a beaten down old man.
Well, he was kind of beaten up.
But Owen were just casually, as they're signing autographs, talking about their kids and I got to pick my kid up from school.
Mick Foley especially, he always was like that.
Mm-hmm.
Always for the kids. Always did things for them. Always, whether he put on a brave face and he was actually hurting or whatever the case was. He was very, very nice, very sweet. And we met him more than one time. At the wrestling restaurant.
That's right.
Remember? We met him.
That's right.
He was there with his children.
In Times Square.
At that time, yes.
Mm-hmm.
He was there with his children. And you could see the family man part of him there. And that was nice to see. I think that's very nice when you see performers or sports figures, especially with sports entertainment figures, whatever, and you see them a little bit more human than their bigger-than-life creations that they create. You know, I like that. It's the same thing with anything else, with rock stars and so on and so forth. I like seeing them as regular people because they really are regular people. Some people, you know, have attitudes, but that makes a person, and that's what makes the world go round.
I was going to mention the fact that you drove past the exit in going to that show and then decided to tell us...
Is that the highlight? I mean, everybody seems to remember this.
Do as I say, not as I do. Backing up on the Jersey Turnpike, no less. Because, you know, the normal person, this was before GPS, and apparently if you missed your exit, you were going into some far off dimension for which there was no return. Right. Even though you could just go get off at the next exit and circle back around.
Well, I didn't know where I was. That was the first time I went to the Meadowlands, so I didn't know.
Here she is backing up. If you ever pass an exit on the highway, don't do that.
No, no, do not do that.
Don't do that.
No, that is not a good thing or the right thing to do.
Anyway, I don't want to drag this out for too long, but before I let you go, I thought it would be fun to test your wrestling knowledge, right? Because you've been around it for so long, I want to see how much of it you've absorbed by osmosis. Because I think you don't let on, but I think you know more than most people would think.
If you remember that time, it was a pay-per-view. It was Bret Hart when he won the title. Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels won the title. I'm sorry. And it was the Iron Man match.
That's right. WrestleMania.
That you have the plaque with
WrestleMania 12.
And I was the one who was screaming at the TV. I'm sitting on the floor.
She was more into that match than I was. I was bored until the last like 5 or 10 minutes. But I've made my thoughts clear on that match before. See, at least I have you here now to back me up. You were more excited and into it than I was.
I admit it. I was the one that was screaming at the TV on the floor that like people do with sports. That's what I was doing with that.
So I've prepared 10 questions. Oh, technically 11, but I want to see how many of these you can get right. Now, we did not talk about this in advance. I did not show you any of these questions.
I have absolutely no idea what he's going to ask.
And I'm going to be very disappointed if you don't get at least half of these right, because I think these are mostly softballs.
Uh-oh.
So, are you ready?
Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right, here we go.
Uh-oh.
Trivia time. I call this Mother's Day Madness.
Mother's Day Madness.
All right, number one. Who are the original three members of the NWO?
Hulk Hogan.
It's one.
Kevin Nash.
It's two.
Scott Hall.
Ah, very nice. See, we're off to a good start.
That's about it. That's what we end.
This is even easier. Question number two. What tag team was Shawn Michaels part of when he first joined WWE?
Rockets. The Rockers.
And who is
Marty Jannetty.
Very nice. You know, he's doing porn now?
Really?
He's got offers.
Oh, my God.
He's got offers.
Oh, this is where things lead.
Question number three.
Mm-hmm.
What was Kurt Angle's big claim to fame before he came to WWE? Kurt Angle was known for something. He was nationally famous.
Oh, he was Olympic something. I know he had a medal.
Be more specific.
Olympic.
You're almost there.
Bodybuilder, wasn't
it? No. You were on the right track.
Olympic something.
Well, you said medalist. I'll give it to you. He was an Olympic gold medalist.
Okay.
So you were right.
Gold medalist for what?
For wrestling.
Okay.
No, for shot put. What else would he be a gold medalist for?
I just remember he had like a little frog or something tattooed on his shoulder.
He does have a tattoo on his shoulder. Question number four.
Right.
You better get this right. The Undertaker's manager, Paul Bearer, used to carry what object to the ring with him?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, if I don't get this right, then I can just give it all.
You work in a funeral home. You better get this right.
It's an urn.
There you go. I was going to say. I was going to end this interview right here. Question number five.
Mm-hmm.
At what WrestleMania did Hulk Hogan body slam Andre the Giant?
Oh my gosh. Wasn't that the one that was outdoors? And that was like, that was supposed to be the really big one?
Which one? Which year? Which WrestleMania which number?
Oh, I don't know which number. I don't know why. No, it can't be. I want to say 95, but I don't think that's right. I don't
know. Well, that would have required a hell of a magic 93? Trick since Andre was dead by 95.
93?
Andre died in 93.
So it was before that?
It was WrestleMania 3, 1987.
Was that the one where it was the three venues?
No, like? That was two. Oh. That was the year before. This was in 87.
I'm getting mine confused.
Yeah, this was at the Silverdome WrestleMania 3. That's All right, it. So that, okay. that's so your I'm, first I'm one confused. Wrong.
Okay. I remember that one.
Question number six. We were just talking about Mick Foley. Mm-hmm. Mick Foley portrayed three different characters during his time in WWE. What were they?
Mankind.
One.
Would Mick Foley...
No.
Okay. Mankind. Oh my gosh. Wait. And we had Sacco the Puppet over there.
Yeah, I bought Sacco, by the way, when they were selling Sacco in WWE shop. One sock I paid $8 for. I'm a wrestling fan.
You could have gotten a sock and drew eyes on it.
I should have stuffed that down my own throat.
Wait. It was Mankind. Oh my gosh, what's his name? Cactus? I can't.
My great-grandfather?
Your great-grandfather? Cactus Jack.
Cactus Jack. That's okay. Two.
Cactus Jack.
There's one more.
Mankind.
A lesser known personality.
You know, I really don't know.
All right. You're never going to get this.
Who is it?
Dude Love.
You see, I completely forgot about Dude that Love. One. Because that was a very little minor...
Yeah, but Dude Love was like a hippie that goes back to your younger years, right? Back in the...
No.
What do you mean, no?
I don't remember.
Tie-dye.
I didn't have tie-dye. I had bell-bottoms, but I didn't have... I don't know, maybe. All right. You're talking 60s. I was 70s.
Question number seven.
Yeah.
You know who Triple H is, of course.
Yeah.
What do the three H's in Triple H stand for?
Hunter Hearst Helmsley.
Very good.
Yes.
All right. Rowdy Roddy Piper. This is question eight. We're coming to the end.
I liked him.
Rowdy Roddy Piper used to host his own talk show segment. What was the name of that segment?
Piper's
Pit. You gotta let me finish the question first.
I know the answer.
She's showing off here.
Well, I'll never make Jeopardy, I guess.
All right, Piper's Pit, you got it right. So you're doing great.
All right.
Question nine. Now, this might be a little tougher.
Okay.
Although, this person was at one of the live events that I remember going to when I was younger, so you should know who this is. What was the name of the early 90s wrestler who had a voodoo character?
Papa Shango.
Ah! Man, I should have made these harder. Papa Shango. I'll tell you what, I'll expand on that. Papa Shango resurfaced in WWF many years later as a completely different character in the Attitude Era. What character did he portray?
Oh, gosh. That wasn't Virgil. No. I remember, but I don't remember his name.
Well, he was the Godfather.
Oh, okay.
He was a pimp.
I never.
Yeah, you would not
know. No, I wouldn't have gotten that. You know what kept coming to my mind? The Junkyard Dog.
A little before that time.
Yeah, I think so. Just a little bit.
Question number 10. Mm-hmm. This might be a tough one, but I have faith in you. Maybe that's my fault, but I do. Who is the man who ran down Stone Cold Steve Austin with a car? There was a pay-per-view in 1999 out in the parking lot. He ran down Stone Cold. They did the big reveal later on TV. Who did it? It was a whodunit.
I remember them pouring cement into a vet.
That was not what I'm talking about.
No. Was it McMahon?
No. He was Samoan.
No, not The Rock.
No. I'm giving you all the hints I can here.
Wait. No, Don Morocco.
He used to dance.
The
fat guy.
Yeah, I know. I remember. Can't think.
I'm trying to help you here.
I know. Wait a minute. The fat guy.
He was fat.
Well, it wasn't Still King is. Kong Bundy.
No, it wasn't. Yes, King Kong Bundy, ladies and gentlemen, ran down Stone Cold Steve Austin in some alternate dimension.
No. Don't say it. I gotta think. I'm thinking.
Well, the Samoan dynasty is big.
Yeah, I know it is. Whoa.
Rikishi.
Oh, right.
It was Rikishi.
You know what you should have said is, wasn't he the one that looked like a sumo wrestler?
Yeah.
Okay, so then I would have remembered.
I told you he was fat. And he danced.
So fat and dancing doesn't mean anything.
Apparently not to you.
People are fat and they dance and there's nothing wrong with it.
Do you know anybody personally who's fat who dances?
I'm taking the fifth right now.
You want to divulge that on the air here?
I'm taking the fifth, thank you.
All right, now there's one last question here.
Mm-hmm.
Favorite wrestler of all time, if you had to choose one. You personally, favorite wrestler of all time. If you had to pick one wrestler who to you would be your favorite of all time, who would it be?
It doesn't matter, old, new.
Doesn't matter. Dead, alive, current, old.
They have all of them.
I mean, I've said, me personally, I've said mine is Bret Hart.
Mm-hmm.
Yours may be different.
I would, well, there's Hulk Hogan and there's Shawn Michaels.
Hulk Hogan and Shawn Michaels. Mm-hmm. Okay, why Hulk Hogan?
I don't know. He just had a certain persona at that time. It was an era, of course. Shawn Michaels appealed to the younger crowd, I guess, in a way, because Hulk Hogan, of course, was getting older as time went on. But Hogan is like trying, I guess he was trying to be a little bit of a role model for some children to a degree, even though we all know about the steroids and everything else that everybody did. But that's another story. But I think, I mean, well, you probably like Bret Hart because he's, you know, what was it? The best there ever was, there is, what that whole is, was, and whatever. But,
that was it. Is, was, and whatever. That was his catchphrase. There it is.
Was, is, and will be. But Shawn Michaels, I don't know. I just feel that, like I said, he appealed to the younger crowd. It was a different era. It's different eras. That's the whole thing. It's different eras. I mean, if you were to ask some other people, they might go back to a lot of older wrestlers. And like I said, Bruno Sammartino or Bob Backlund before he became psychotic. And, you know, there was a lot of people will remember Rick Rude. This point in time, if I look back at it, I don't know. I might say maybe I might lean more towards Shawn Michaels.
Well, that was good. You did very well, I have to say. You actually got most of them right. So you did very well here. Anything else you'd like to say to everybody listening here before I let you go?
Well, I just want to say to all the mothers out there, everybody, you know, be nice to your mothers because you see what they end up doing for you in the end. But no, I want to wish everybody a happy Mother's Day, happy and healthy, and hats off to all the mothers. And I have to add one thing. Whenever your children go into therapy, it's always the mother's fault.
She looked right in my face when she said that. The hell is that?
It's always the mothers get blamed for everything.
No, but thank you for doing it. She was a little nervous going into this. She had a little bit of stage fright. She was very modest about the whole thing.
Me laugh.
Well, I was trying to make her comfortable. And
comfortable? I got hysterical.
And I think everything, I told you everything would turn out well. See, I wouldn't lie to you. But no. Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you.
I love you.
I love you too.
You are the best.
Thank you very
much.
Now
get out of here. I have a show to do.
All right. Bye.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Sala Monster sounds off.
They have Kane in the back. This is what he said. Tonight, I will delight as I enter the abyss with a fellow monster. But it is I who will climb out alone and with a smile across my face.
Oh my God. What do they think this is, Shakespeare? I was driving yesterday, and some asshole double parks his car in the service lane. I should have cut a promo the way the WWE would script one out for me. Why art thou parking like one's smelly orifice? I wish 1,000 deaths upon thee. Then I could do a fucking tope, and we could fade to commercial.
Sala Monster sounds off. Since 2007, the Sala Monster sounds off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monsters sound off.